Welcome to episode 6 of season 19 of the Growing Empire Show. Today, I am interviewing my special guest, Darren Light. He's a mechanical engineer by trade, and he quickly realized that his W-2 job and 401k would not support the current and retirement lifestyle that he wanted. After some convincing by a friend, he attended a guru seminar in Knoxville. Then he started purchasing single-family rentals and doing flips 4 months after attending the seminar. In April of 2017, he was laid off from his corporate job of 12 years. And it was at that moment that he dove into real estate investing full-time. He cashed out his 401k and stock options and continued to pursue education. In November of 2017, he attended his very first Jake and Gino live event in Knoxville. And it was at that moment that he decided to focus on multifamily assets and sell all of his single family rentals. To date, he's done 13 flips in 2 years, and he's continued his goal of investing in not only multifamily, but other asset classes. Since October of 2018, he became the part owner on the GP side of 103 doors. He's currently pursuing some deals over 200 doors, and he started a multifamily meetup in Johnson City, Tennessee. With Johnson City being such a great market, he saw a need to bring other multifamily investors together to leverage the power of partnerships, the market, and the capital. He thrives on inspiring and motivating others and living the go-giver attitude. And he lives each day with gratitude. So I'm really excited to hear about Darren's journey, and I expect that you will too. So make sure you stay tuned to this episode.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
Welcome to the Growing Empires podcast, where it's our mission to help investors create wealth through real estate and secure financial freedom. Today, we have an amazing show planned, and I'm really excited for today's episode. Joining me is my co-host and good friend and colleague, Robert Musso. Robert, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here for another episode, and great to have such a special guest with Darren Light. Good to be here.
Awesome. Robert, why don't you start by giving a quick background to our listeners on what you do and how you know Darren?
Absolutely. So my background is 20-year corporate career in the hotel sector. Amongst that entire career path, I was investing in multifamily real estate and eventually followed my dream and took the path to entrepreneurialism and left corporate America. Now I'm a full-time real estate professional. I live in New Jersey. Most of my properties are in Pennsylvania. And as most people know, I love to use real estate as the bridge to living my best life, which includes family, food, faith, travel, and investments. I am part of a very wonderful family with all of you, MIH Mastermind. And that's how all of us on this podcast are connected. So it is a great pleasure to welcome Darren to this call and join us on this wonderful version. And Jennifer, thank you for asking me to be a co-host on your fifth year of this wonderful podcast. I know you've done many, many episodes over the years, and I'm so excited to be a part of it this season.
Well, thank you for joining us, Robert. And Darren Light. So Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys, both of you. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Darren, why don't you give us a brief background about kind of your journey, what corporate career you were in before you transitioned to real estate and kind of how you got started and what motivated you to get into real estate and kind of where we are today.
Sure. First, congrats on the 5 years of a podcast. That's in and of itself a huge accomplishment. Having done one for only two. My background, mechanical engineer, 20 years in my corporate world. I had always had an entrepreneurial bug, if you will. Have two children, grown children now, have two grandchildren through my daughter as well. I tried a couple of MLM type businesses throughout the years while I was still in corporate America. I don't even know that I really wanted to necessarily break from corporate America at that time. But as time went on and my children became older, I realized that, yes, I do want to break from corporate America and just call my own shots at some point in time. And the closest thing I got to that was a friend of mine and I. We started a concrete coating business and owned it for 5 years. But during that 5 years, we our goal was to have that one person that could run our business. We could never identify that person or get that person that we knew could do it for us. So here we are raising families, working 40, 50 hours a week in a corporate America, as well as coating concrete on the weekends. And we had some laborers, you know, things of that nature. Fortunately, we were able to sell that business, make a little bit of money. And then I got into real estate, to be honest, from a coworker slash friend that said, let's go to this guru seminar in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I currently live and have lived most of my life. And it really just started from there. One of the big brand education companies back in the day had a seminar here, and we immediately came out of there, started flipping houses, bought up to five single families and one triplex. So we had eight units, and we're flipping a few houses along with that. And then I discovered multifamily, and during my discovery of multifamily, before really getting into it, understanding it, and knowing what it could help me with as far as scalability and really creating true generational wealth, I was let go of my W-2 position. But I tell everyone, people ask me, when did you know to leave? Most people don't know that it wasn't my choice to leave. However, that was a huge blessing in disguise, because that removed a decision from me that I did not have to make. And I already knew what I wanted to do. And it was all time, it was full-time multifamily at that. My mindset had already shifted. And when that occurred, a huge weight was lifted. I sold all my private stocks in the company. I busted up my whole 401 and threw it all at multifamily. People might say, well, how'd you bust up your 401? Why didn't you roll it over? And you know what? I didn't know what I didn't know at the time. I made a decision, and that's the decision I made. And now here we are investing in RV parks, campgrounds, RV and boat storage, midterm rentals with my wife, Penny. We're looking to do some ground up development this year, just she and I. So that's pretty much in a nutshell how I got to where I am and where we are today.
Well, I had a very similar experience, unlike Robert, who had to make the decision. I was let go as well. I was downsized as a corporate employee. Yeah. So I think, Darren, you and I are very lucky in the sense that we never had to make that choice, because so many people never make that choice. They never get off the fence. So for us, you know, being kind of forced into it, and I know from knowing you, you're very similar minded in a sense that, you know, it's just a bump in the road. You're just going to pivot. You're going to do something different. So for us, I think we were very lucky. Somebody like Robert had to make a collective decision. And later in life, when he had family and finances and, you know, a wife and things to worry about. So I'm sure, you know, that makes it much more difficult to do when you have to make a collective decision versus kind of being forced into it. So
absolutely.
Let's jump into some questions about some of your like key learnings, right? So you said, okay, the first thing you did was you jumped into single families, you were flipping properties, you went to this guru seminar. So what lessons do you think you took from those moments of flipping homes that you use now in your multifamily RV parks and real estate investing strategies?
I think the one thing, just starting out with flipping the homes and managing your eight units by yourself, innately ingrained in me is sort of this coaching mentality. I was an athlete growing up. Even in college, I was fortunate enough to play a sport. And so there's a sports, I guess, I guess it's just the way I'm built, right? And so when I got to that point, and all that stuff was hard and a lot of it sucked, right? Quite frankly, I knew it was a means to somewhere. I may not have known where that somewhere was at that point in time. For example, multifamily, that would make things easier. And then I was doing it, and eventually that partner that I got into the business with went by the wayside for good and bad reasons. For bad reasons, that partner was incredibly selfish, didn't want to do their share of the work. And then we parted ways, and then I could make my own decisions, didn't have to worry about this other person and realize, oh, I can do this on my own. Not till I discovered, and then that also taught me, when I discovered multifamily, is even though I'm an extrovert and love talking to anybody and everybody and pretty much have that ability and love doing so, partnering was not something I had considered until I got into multifamily. And so once I realized, okay, we're going to go down this route, we've got to go get some partners and find some like-minded people. And due to that, I'll go ahead, and I don't know what your next question is, but hopefully maybe it leads into a little bit of this. And then I would go to the monthly Knox RIA meeting, just like we have in most areas, right? This was the meeting in the area, the biggest one. Great meeting. You could meet anybody from all aspects of real estate, no matter what they were doing. And so through that meeting, I met someone that really was a hard money lender, but doing it for several companies. And so he was a kind of a conduit between those companies and us. And he gave me free tickets to a multifamily, the very first multifamily that Jake and Gino had in Knoxville. And that was in 2017. And the only reason I went is because I got a free ticket. But that's where I learned about multifamily. And an hour into that conference, just sitting there, knowing one person, I was ready. I couldn't get out of there fast enough to go start the actions that I had learned in 1 hour. And then met my eventual business partner to date. We've partnered on almost everything. Started to do some more things separately. It just happens organically, as you know. But still have a great friendship and partnership with that person. And that's how we got into multifamily at that point.
So that's great. So you went from, so I didn't even realize about you. So you started off with the single family flips and then into the multifamily. And then I'm always curious about how you then connected from multifamily to your RV parks. That's an intriguing asset class that I don't know much about. However, you know, through folks like you who are experts in it, in the field, I've been just intrigued by how I'm seeing and feeling these particular asset classes almost turn into resorts in some cases. And that's intriguing to me because of my hotel background. So just curious how you made that transition as well.
So we're starting in 2018, buying aggressively multifamily. Fast forward to 21, where multifamily pricing was starting to get way up there and institutional money, family office money was paying ridiculous pricing, going hard money day one. And we couldn't compete with that. And so we weren't looking for another asset class. We were just managing our operations, right? And running our properties and asset managing our properties, trying to find another one down the road. And a acquaintance of then Penny, my girlfriend, knew that I was into real estate. We met through her, and she started trying to show me some flip houses because she knew I was into that. We still flip houses even today. We don't do it like we used to. We do home run flip houses. Let's put it that way. Because we still have the bandwidth and the groups that can do it for us without us, you know, doing any of that work, which is what you want. But, out of the blue, she sent me an RV park and said, would you be interested? And this person was trying to get, her feet wet as a, she had been a single family realtor, had not been in it long, but was trying to get her feet wet in the commercial space, if you will. And they had an opportunity through another relationship that, of the owner of that park, to be the potential listing agent. And before that even came about, and you know how it is, you call your hot list, your top 10 list, whatever it is of your buyers. And she just happened to send me this text. And I said, if you've got some numbers you can send me, sure, I'll at least take a look at it. And so I called Greg, my main business partner, and we exchanged. I sent him the numbers, and we decided, okay, we need to learn how to underwrite this because we've never done this before. We called a colleague who was already in the space and did some research on her own, asked some more questions of some people that were in the space, people we didn't even know. And before you know it, we're underwriting this park. And a week after she sent me the message, I had an on-site tour with her and the potential listing agent, which just happened to have managed that park for 3 years. What a weird coincidence, right?
Yeah.
So she knew everything about this park. And then when I started asking her questions that she could not answer, she got the CFO that was running this property and all the other owners' properties that he owned. He owned a trucking company. He owned some other businesses. He was running all of his businesses. And as fate would have it, with the good old boy mentality and me being able to talk to anyone, we realized he was from the same area as Penny in Southwest Virginia. We knew that they knew multiple people. As we got on into this conversation, he knew I was asking very intelligent questions and knew what I was talking about at that point. And we were on the phone probably an hour, hour and a half. And I remember this specifically. This day, we're sitting in her Cadillac Escalade SUV, and it's pouring down rain. And this is how we toured the property. And after the call with him, he sent us some more information, got more of the story about why they're selling. As you normally do, you know, you get the right person on the phone. We underwrote it. We knew we had an opportunity. And the crazy thing about that story is We had our Greg had already gotten it somehow. You know how this stuff goes. Once you start talking to brokers, you're getting these emails or whatnot. We'd already gotten an email about another one for sale in the same area, the Smoky Mountains. And we actually closed on that one before we did this particular one that we're talking about now. And a lot of my answer to the question, Robert, is it was based on a connection. And I think that once you do something in real estate, yes, you can be incredibly successful at that one thing. But you could take the same multifamily underwriting principles, and the majority, 90% of them, apply to an RV park. And then there's different levels of RV parks, just like there are for multifamily, A through D. And it was that connection. But I'll say to people, you just evolve, and you evolve to that next asset class, because you're still talking with lenders, you're still talking about occupancy, you're still talking about NOI, revenue, expenses, management. All that stuff still applies. Yes, it's a little bit different, but not so much different as what people think. So the big answer to the question is it was through a connection and a network, and that's how it happened. And then all of a sudden we go by, I guess we've bought six in the last three and a half years, something along those lines. And it just like everything else that we do in this space, they're not all home runs. They've not all ended up being home runs. Stuff has happened. Like last year, for example, the occupancy rate for most of the country was down 10 to 20% at RV parks and campgrounds, depending on where you were. But as a whole, if you ask someone, hey, how are things across the country? Most people, educated people, owners would tell you, oh, it's down 10 to 20%. Okay, I'm going to attribute that to the economy, inflation, fuel prices, those big three. And then depending on where you are, there may be some other factors that are going on. But yeah, the network and just evolving into that space and sort of learning a little bit about it before you just dive in head first is how we got to that. And we love the management aspect of RV parks more than we do multifamily. I can elaborate that on that right now if you want.
Yeah, I was actually, that's funny, because I was going to ask you, I said, you know, because yes, you can invest in all these things, but the management style and the management needs for each one of those things that you've experienced are all drastically different. So, you know, managing a flip is managing vendors and contractors. Managing mm-hmm. multifamily is day-to-day tenant handholding, operations, you know, it's very operationally heavy. I would imagine managing an RV park is very different because, I mean, you know, your utilities are just to the land and then they come and go. You know, it's almost like you had mentioned, you'd also do like seasonal, like short-term rentals, right? I would assume mm-hmm. that it's very similar to something like that too, just with an RV park. So how has your ability to locate good third-party managers, unless you're doing it yourself, how has that changed as you're, you know, expanding in these different asset classes?
You're exactly right, Jen. And the biggest difference in the RV / campground space, this is the number one in Darren's opinion. The biggest difference is the mentality of the guests that's at your park. So the mentality of me running a crew to flip houses is you can't get them done fast enough. And right. It's always going to cost more money than what you budgeted. It's just the nature of the business. Yep. Not always, but you know, this stuff happens.
Yep.
So, and you can't, and then when it gets on the market, you have very little control on, and you need to have a bang them up realtor that really knows what he or she is doing. You got a great marketing, and then you're just relying on the market at that point, right?
Right.
That's a lot of that's out of your control. Multifamily, these are people's homes. And we use that terminology, you know, this is your home. This is not your unit. You know, we don't refer to them as a tenant. We refer to them as a guest or what have you. Just more respectful. However, if that toilet gets stopped up or if that sink starts leaking, you cannot get it fixed fast enough. Speed of maintenance in multifamily is everything. Move on to the RV park / campground space. The mentality of a guest at an RV park / campground space is even if they live there full time as a long-termer, what we call long-termers or a monthly, they are at a park. The scenery is serene. They are around other like-minded people. They may like to travel. And if something goes wrong, it's 99% of the time wrong with their RV or their camper. If something goes wrong with a park, it's usually a plumbing or a sewer issue, could be an electrical issue. But those episodes are few and far between as opposed to these 100 RVs slash campers that are at that are on your property.
Right.
They know that that's up to them to get it fixed. They can call a mobile tech or something along those lines. There's a relaxed mentality. The best management technique, in my opinion, for this asset class is you have an on-site manager that lives there full time. Generally, you either have possibly an extra home. Sometimes there are houses on these parks that have been built by the people that developed them back in the day. Or you're, and you give them free rent and give them free utilities, everything. But their job is they're taking in the guests, they're paying bills. And that can vary based on ability and how you run your business. You know, are they in QuickBooks? Depends on their ability. And obviously, you've vetted them for a trust factor at that point as well. Or they may have a space, one of the nicer spaces where they live full-time in their own RV or their campsite. And if they do that, they may want to be there a year or two or three, or they may only want to be there for a season, and then they're going to go on their way, and you've got to hire another one. And then depending on the size of your park, you always have a management team. You want to be a team if you can, a husband and wife, because generally the husband, generally the husband is responsible for most of the maintenance. The wife is responsible for running the office. And then you may have one or two set of what we call camp workers. And those camp workers are ones that may only be there for 3 or 4 months at a time. And this is what they do full time. They travel to around the country in their RV or camper so they can see the country. They give us 24 hours a week between them. That's what they get their site for. If they work beyond that and we have an agreement, it's for some things that we need to do, we will pay them hourly past that. But other than that, they relieve the manager for the manager to have 2 days off in a row, successive days off. So they feel like they are having, you know, that good time for them, their family, what have you. But that kind of is the model of how we do management and the mentality of the people you're dealing with, as opposed to flipping houses and multifamily. And then midterm rentals, we can get into that. Penny manages midterm rentals. She has about 25 now. Some we own, some she just manages for others. The mentality of a midterm rental, because they are traveling professionals, engineers, traveling nurses, are there's a level of clientele there. And what we've found is most of them, that all they do is sleep inside the property. Otherwise, they're out also exploring, seeing the area. I'm going to go work in Knoxville for 3 months. I'm going to go work in Allentown for 3 months. I'm going to work in Phoenix for 3 months. Name the city. This is what they do. This is what they why they get paid big money. However, there's another instance or type of traveling professional. They may only live 2 to 4 hours from their home, but they know that just by making that sacrifice 4 or 5 days a week, they're going to make double, triple what they could make at home, but they have a family back home. So they go home as soon as their shift is over on a Thursday or Friday. They work 4-10s or something like that, for example, or 5 days a week, doesn't matter. They'll drive back home. And so, again, they're only there mostly sleeping because they work 12-hour shifts, 10 to 12-hour shifts. So the wear and tear on your property is so much less. And because of the level of clientele, there's just other things you don't have to put up with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So do you find that one weathers, you know, economic changes better than another, or do you think all of them require the same ability to shift and adjust?
I would say, based on just this last year, to be honest with you, that multifamily weathers the economic atmosphere better than the other ones. Although for the midterm rental sector, they can weather it, but it's based on region. It's just based on, like, she'll talk to someone that's coming to Knoxville or leaving Knoxville, and they may tell her, hey, Knoxville Park West Hospital is cutting back on nursing contracts. So for this particular area, although there's 4 or 5 major other hospitals here, she can find out that this particular one. And so that happens. That is very just up and down. Also near the holidays, Thanksgiving through middle of January, is tough in this space, because what people will do is they'll want to sign a contract with a company, engineer or nurse, but say, hey, I'd like to be home for 2 weeks during Christmas. And most of the majority of the companies say, no, we're not doing that. And so they'd say, okay, I'm just not going to sign your contract. I'm going to stay close to home and work. that's another thing that's you have to contend with or know that you're going to have to put up with it, if you will, on the numbers when you're planning out your year.
That's interesting. Do you have any amenities, Darren, that are similar to resorts, or is everything pretty much standard across the board where you offer sewer, water, electrical, and then the atmosphere itself are the amenities, the beauty of the community or the town or the mountains or the whatever the case?
Yeah, we currently have one resort style RV park, which is in the Wares Valley area of Pigeon Forge in the Great Smoky Mountains. It's called Cove Creek. This is the one I started with that I told you about. This was the very first one. And although we didn't close it after we'd already closed a couple others. And interestingly enough, the way we closed this one, it just took some more negotiation and finding out some things. We coupled this with another RV park in Northern Kentucky, and we created a fund. I'm not going to take credit for creating the fund. It was done with a partner that had already been down this route once before. Through the Jake and Gino space is how we met them. And so if you invested in this particular fund, you were investing in Cove Creek and Wares Valley and the Northern Kentucky park in Northern Kentucky. And I think I've shared that information about Northern Kentucky in some of our MIH chat groups. We sold that one in December for a 3.3 equity multiple because... Wow. And the way that one operated was it was more of a seasonal, but it had contract workers. This is very common in the RV space as well. Instead of having condos or houses for midterm rentals, a lot of these monthly people are workers. They're contract workers, and they worked at some plants up there in Northern Kentucky, and they would sign a six-month contract with our RV park. Well, that's golden for us. That's constant revenue. You know, you don't have to depend on the seasonality, and that could combat the country being down 10 to 20% because that park is sort of a mixture. So is Cove Creek. We have so many long-termers that keeps the revenue up where we need it. But at the same time, you have seasonal people that come and go for vacations and that sort of thing. So just kind of throwing some information out there about how that park ran and that we sold it, particularly because we saw possibly another kind of windfall in regards to occupancy for 2025, but then just down the road, someone was building a big resort style RV park. And so we didn't want to contend with that competition and decided, you know, what investor is going to balk at a 3.3 equity multiple. So that's why we made that decision for that particular one. Let's go back to the Cove Creek and your original question. Cove Creek has a saltwater pool. It has, a bathhouse where people can go in and shower in the bathhouse. It has a laundry facility. It has, and this is one building that encompasses the bathhouse, the laundry. I think in that recreation room, which was a mess when we bought it, we now have card operated arcade games. Think about you're here with your 10 and 12 year olds on vacation, and mom and dad just want to sit by the pool and have a drink, you know, without these kids. Mom, I'm bored, whatever. Hey, here's a credit card. Go play arcade games for 2 hours. But this particular property also has a fishing pond. We keep it stocked, but we do catch and release. So we don't really have to stock it that much. That's a big hit. And you don't pay for that. That's just part of the amenity for being there. We also have a community space where this park is very well known for its events. Halloween decorating costumes, Labor Day potluck, Memorial Day potluck, 4th of July, even with the fireworks. We have a community space where grill outside slash have a space where we can come in inside in the weather and have all these tables set up. And, you know, the campers contribute to that. So they feel like it's a big, big, big on community. This resort style RV park also has pull through concrete pads. So if you're driving a Tiffin, a big Tiffin bus that's 50 feet long, you can just pull through your site, built-in fire pits into the concrete. A couple of sites have fireplace-style outdoor fire pits, premium sites, with another pull-through or back-end right on the pond where the fishing is. There's two or three of those there. You're going to pay a premium. This park also has two or three tiny cabins that we've added since purchase. Nice park model cabins. Bring them in on wheels, park them, tie them to the foundation, skirt them. Nobody knows it has wheels on it. And a lot of that has to do with the regulation of the, you know, the city codes or county codes or something along those lines. So that is truly a resort style park. We have another one in Townsend, which is 7 or 8 miles from this one I just described. It's on what they call the peaceful side of the Smokies, not as commercialized. And it just, it has a pool, has a playground. However, it's on the river. And so the river sites are premium sites. People book the premium sites. They want to be on the river. They want to see that water. They have their fire pit there. They grill their food. And then they come in groups every year. They'll book the same site. And they'll book it a year in advance because this is what they do. That's about the only amenities we have on that particular one. So it does vary. It varies whether it's, and then some of the parks are mostly long-term because of workers or with where housing, and we're seeing this a lot, where housing prices have gone nationally, and particularly everyone's moving to Knoxville. A lot of people are moving to Knoxville. I just read an article today. It's still number five. It was number five for 23 and 24. And like 20 and 21, it was number one. So it's now it's number five on the list. But you taking that into effect, so just keeps continuing to driving house prices up. And our absorption rate is pretty much, I think, as close to 100 as you can get. They can't build multifamily and or homes fast enough. That puts people out. If people come here for a job, what am I going to do? Oh, okay. Well, I've got this $100,000 RV / trailer. I'll go down the road and I'll park it there until I can buy a house, or I'll just park it there for however long, but they get a monthly rate. And it's becoming a need for housing, to be honest, not just because they may have a contract here to work for 6 months, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you have any RVs that you own? Like, and do you allocate a certain amount of RVs for people who don't own RVs and just want like short-term housing or something of that nature?
We partner with some of the more well-known national companies that rent RVs, and you can book them through our individual RV websites. It takes you to their websites to do that. At one park in Gatlinburg, which is a third one, we own 4 or 5, and it's not really for that purpose as far as living, but people that have never stayed in one, they want that luxury experience for doing it for the first time. They don't want to go rent one. They're scared to pull it with their truck or whatever, or don't want to hire someone to drop it off. They're there permanently. People will rent those. And let's say a site might cost you $70 a night, $80 a night in peak season in the summertime. Well, we rent those for $250 a night.
Wow.
Just think of that ROI. Because they're sitting there, we have to clean them, you know, and we do the maintenance on those. Now, obviously, it gets back into a mobile home type situation. You don't want to own mobile homes in a mobile home park because of that. But if they're nice and they're not as old and you're doing it for that reason, a handful, it's okay. If you get one that's, you know, 10 years old and start having a lot of maintenance problems with it, well, you probably need to pull it out of there and either buy another one or just make it an available space.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
As an investor, we know it's important to stay on top of market trends and real estate opportunities that add value to your portfolio. We also know that having a trusted source of reliable information to help you stay a step ahead of other investors is critical to your success. If you're interested in having these types of resources, as well as access to me and my team, I invite you to join the Empire Investment Club, a free service that gives you an easier way to make sense of today's and tomorrow's real estate opportunities. As a member of the Empire Investment Club, you'll get access to relevant resources and investment-focused experiences such as live interactive webinars, market trend presentations, and investor socials designed to equip you with what you need to succeed. So whether you're an active investor, passive investor, a combination of both, or just starting out, the club is where you'll get what you need to build a portfolio you love. To join, just head over to jenniferdejesus.com, sign up, and we'll see you in the club, where everyone's on a journey to becoming a better investor.
Are there any additional tax advantages or financial tricks that apply in the RV space world that wouldn't apply like in multifamily or single family flips?
I will give Boomer Philbrick credit for when he came and spoke at your event in Pennsylvania in November. And you may or may not remember what he said, but in the RV space, bonus depreciation is almost dollar per dollar. As compared to multifamily or any other space. So that's one aspect that I didn't know going in. When I found it out, obviously we were already under contract. And all these parks I'm telling you about, he's done the cost segregation studies on them, so he'd be very familiar. But And don't ask me the ins and outs of how and why that is the case, because I'm not the cost seg expert. Other than that, I can't think of anything else, Jennifer. I may be able to hear if I...
No, that was it. There was something very specific, and I couldn't remember it. That's why I was like, well, I know he was talking to you specifically, so I know that there's something, but I couldn't put my finger on it either. So, but yeah, right. You're right about that. Now that you say it, it's that bonus depreciation kind of nugget. So not only were you giving your investors a 3x multiple, which is insanely awesome, but then they've got that bonus depreciation and that the benefits from that cost seg. So that was huge. That was really huge. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
That was a huge win. So what is your long-term vision for your real estate business, and what's the next big milestone that you're working toward for 2025?
Vision for real estate business in general. As you both know, Penny and I want to get into the warehouse, industrial, flex space, first with you guys. I know there's a need here in Knoxville for it as well. That's just a new venture that I know is the thing about that space is it not 100%, but it almost takes the human element out of real estate. You know, in regards to, you have the multifamily sector where it's all about people. It's all about people. And don't get me wrong, as a whole, all the asset classes are, but it's more focused on people in the multifamily. You're talking about people's homes. When you get into the, and this is just my opinion, you guys can tell me I'm wrong, but in the warehouse, flex space, industrial, there's more of that humanistic element removed, I think, where it's just more business transactional, if that makes sense. I'm not that I don't like people, but as we know, it can be exhausting in multifamily, right? But I'm looking forward to that. Penny and I are looking forward to purchase some land here locally to us. Probably won't be in Knox County, due to pricing and regulation, but we will buy it in a county or two north of here where we have a 34 unit that we've had for 3 years and a great third-party manager there. And we want to do our first new build, just us. Pay cash for land, leverage that as collateral to do the construction loan, build one fourplex, get it cash flowing. How many more can we put on an acre or two? Max it out. That's the plan for starting this year. I'm fortunate enough to, I'm now doing some coaching for multifamily with another education platform that came along due to some relationships that I maintained through Jake and Gino World. And, I really enjoy doing that. That doesn't happen often. It's not an everyday thing. But just being able to continue to give to people and share what I've learned and see them be successful, especially younger people, go to some of these meetups here locally or people reach out to you and try to add some value to you. I just love that aspect. And then Penny and I are launching her midterm rental coaching business. And thank you, by the way, for your insight on that last week when we caught up on a call.
Sure.
I have exhausted ChatGPT with these business plans, man. I'm actually pretty proud of myself. The other night I was watching basketball and I'm like, all right, what else can this thing do? And so we're really excited about getting that going. And seeing where it goes, we don't know, but you don't know until you pull the trigger and just try. So, I hope that answered the question good enough.
Absolutely.
No, that's great. And, we are here to help you, guide you, and, give you any insight on the industrial warehouse space, especially obviously, as you know. And I agree with you, Darren, to be honest with you, we're all old enough, we're all experienced enough to know that we all like to network and be around people. And I'm not trying to take out the human element either, but having done so much construction and rehabilitation and add value, it is great to be in an asset class where you are removing a lot of the day-to-day operational frustrations of dealing with a residential tenant due to the triple net structure and due to the warehouse structure. So I like that. And then you could focus on sales and acquisitions and finding the next asset. And these really do allow you to have more flexibility in your schedule, more time. And you can hire a property manager as well. There's some good ones out there who aren't managing like they would be a residential. And they can even take that element off. And it's mostly bookkeeping and some things like snow shoveling and some, odds and ends. But it's great asset class. So we're excited to help you out in any way, to partner with you in any way as well.
I completely agree regarding the industrial flex space. From owning industrial flex space myself, and multi different types of asset classes that I've owned, I can tell you that industrial flex space is probably one of my favorite. I mean, I love multifamily, but you're right. It's very much a people business, and it can be very exhausting. There's no doubt about it. But there's something to be said about just that triple net lease. Yes, you know, you have this space, and as long as I've got everything working, right, and the building is accessible, I mean, there's like little to no communication with your tenants because they're running a business, they're operating, and some don't even operate their businesses. They use them for storage. So it's a very interesting asset class. It has always been incredibly lucrative for me. I think like anything, it's got to be in the right market and it's got to be the right type of space. You got to know who your competitors are, no different than what you were talking about, Darren, when you were talking about the RV space, right? You got to know who your competition is. You got to know what you're up against, and you got to make sure that you've got something that people want. And I think that this flex space is just, there is such a demand for it. Just like there's a demand for housing in this area, there's such an incredible demand for this multi-tenant flex space in this local area that it is just a slam dunk deal every time I've been around it. So it's pretty exciting. It's really, really exciting.
Let me give you guys one more example of a type of RV park. A colleague and friend of mine who is in Knoxville, and he used to specialize in short sale single families and flips, and been doing that for 15 to 20 years, very successful. He and a partner built a 141 site RV park in a remote county north of Knoxville. However, Knoxville is surrounded by lakes, many, many, many lakes, and lake life in this area is huge economy here when the lakes are up. Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, controls the lake levels, so they bring them down in the fall and the winter happens, and then they bring them back up because they know all the millions of dollars they get poured into this area. But that particular property is surrounded by lakes as well. And so what he did, instead of doing a hybrid long-term / seasonal, he's doing long-term only. So basically it's become a mobile home park. It's long-term only. He has a saltwater pool. He has laundry. He has internet, great internet. And he is offering, if I want to go have a site and I'm going to live there for however long, let's say you just signed a year contract and you just re-up it. But let's say I knew I was going to be there the next 5 or 10 years for whatever reason. I can pay extra to have a fancy stamped concrete pad poured. I can have a gondola or a barn or a pole barn installed. I can have an outdoor fireplace installed at my expense to have my site better and nicer, because that's what I want. I'm willing to do it. I've got the money. But he also takes payment in full for the year up front. So he knows what he's got coming in, and there's no exception to it whatsoever. So by doing that, you're automatically taking your clientele notch up another one. So it's not necessarily resort type, even though it does have a pool and views for miles, which are amazing, but you're by the lake, because what people will do is they'll end up bringing their boat there and storing it there, and he should charge for that as well. And then just take it down to the lake, and you know, they're on the lake whenever they want to go. Or here's what will happen as well, and this is something else. They will leave their RV or camper there. Let's say they live 2 hours away in Alabama, Georgia, whatever, doesn't matter. Or Knoxville. It's a good hour and 15 minutes from Knoxville. Every weekend, we're going there so we can be on the lake. During the week, my kids have school, and my husband and I work. But on the weekends, baby, at Friday to Sunday, we're going there, and we just keep it there because we paid for that. We don't want to lose that spot. That's another thing that's occurring in the space. And I don't really know how to label that type of park, to be honest with you.
That's very interesting.
It's creative. it's creative. That's how I would label it.
Yeah, very creative.
So, Robert, I think we're ready for our lightning round. Would you agree?
Cool. Uh-oh. Yeah, I think it's time.
All right. So, Darren, for this lightning round, we are going to rapid fire a couple of quick questions to you, and you're just going to spit off whatever comes to mind. Ready?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So, flipping RV park or multifamily, if you could choose only one and do it forever, which one would you choose?
RV park.
Okay.
What is your favorite real estate book?
It's not real estate, but I think it is Go Giver.
Okay.
Nice. If you had only $10,000 to start with and you had to start all over, what would you do first?
Pay for education.
Oh, that was a good one.
If you and Penny could pick any travel destination for your next adventure, where would you go?
Italy.
Cool.
Biggest myth about real estate investing that you wish more people understood?
Oh, biggest myth. That it's hard. It's not hard. You just have to take action.
Good point.
What AI are you using right now? I believe you just mentioned ChatGPT, so I'm kind of
realizing that's the only one I'm using right now, Robert. And, you know, it's the paid version 4.0, but there's so much out there that Darren's head, if I start looking at others, I want to master this one. And that's a big step for me because I'm not techie. So mastering ChatGPT and maybe pushing it to its limits and thinking, okay, what else if I did the same thing on another platform would occur? So I'm open to it, but the way my mind works, I have to stick with the one, and I've been very happy with it so far.
Yep, I agree.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Darren, for being such a good sport on our lightning round. Appreciate it very much. So how can our listeners get in touch with you if they'd like to learn more about the asset classes that you're investing in or learn more about some of your deals?
They can text or call me at 865-310-6362. If you text me and I want to get back to you immediately, I'm probably on a call or in a meeting or talking to my wife. That's important. Or you can email me, and I don't have a fancy business email, but my email is my first initial D, last name Light, D-L-I-G-H-T, 6362@gmail. Or then you can find me on social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find Penny Odum, O-D-U-M, on all those, as well as Instagram. I'm not on Instagram.
Awesome. Robert, any last thoughts or comments?
No, we appreciate it, Darren, very much. And, you know, Jennifer and I, you know, have been talking a lot about the MIH family and why it separates, you know, itself from so many other platforms out there. And, you know, I have my own reasons. And I love the fact that so much of us genuinely care about one another. We put our egos aside. We're thinking with our hearts. We're thinking of our children's future for each and every one of us. I'm really happy to be a part of this family for 5 years, and I hope we can continuously grow our friendship and maybe partnership for years to come into the future. So I just wanted to thank the both of you, you know, for being a part of the family and being two very important pieces for me, you know, to realize that there are some great people out there. It's about who, not how. You have to network. You have to go out and speak to people. You have to go out and sometimes take some risks that you normally would not take. And, you know, the world's your oyster if you find the right group of people that you can trust and move forward with, you know, like-minded vision and goals.
I couldn't have said it better, Robert. It's an honor to be your friend, getting to know you better. And I'm looking forward to that potential partnership. And Jen, you just fit right in with everyone else. I'll go ahead and let you know that I had a conversation with Chris Jackson last week, and I told Chris Jackson, and Robert does have reasons you didn't list about why MIH is different, but basically we were talking about MIH, similar to this conversation here. And I said, the 80-20 principle does not apply. And I said, if you think about that, it applies to everything in life, and it does not apply to MIH. And I said, that blows my mind. So that's just a comment and a conversation that we had.
But yeah, very good point. That's great.
But I appreciate the both of y'all, and I appreciate the time today as well.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much, Darren, for joining us. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful day. I appreciate y'all.
You too, guys.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks, Robert. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you for listening to today's episode. And until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.